We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey there, Knicks fans. Yeah, got the swagger back now. How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School podcast. A very much more genuinely jovial edition of the pod, recording this at 6:11 p.m. on I've lost track of the days. It is Thursday. And I'm joined, of course, by my compatriot all the way through these playoffs, Jeremy Cohen. Hello, sir. How are you feeling today?
No silver linings today, John.
Just what's gold a linings. Lining?
Yeah.
It's all just, gold.
Yeah, exactly. That was great. It was a really exciting game. It was a win, first and foremost. That was great. Yes. But it was also how they got there. That was just so exhilarating. So, yeah, it's good. It's good to be tied 1-1.
It's steak and lobster for everybody right now until game three, at least. Quick programming note. You are getting a little bit of a bonus on this episode. Not just me and Jeremy. Coming up in a little bit, I got a chance to speak to MSG's Monica McNutt, who you, I'm sure, have seen on the MSG pregame show, halftime show, postgame show. Recorded that conversation a little while ago. So after myself and young Mr. Cohen are done talking, stick around because you're going to get that convo. And like I said, it's a lot of fun. But first, of course, me and Jeremy have some business to attend to, which is to discuss this game that. I want to open by saying I went right to the live stream after the game and then I sat down and I wrote about it and then I went right to sleep, got up, did a second edition of the newsletter, finished that, and rolled right into the Friday's edition of the newsletter and have been working on that all day and then rolled right into talking to Monica. I just came back from a walk, as you know, I love to do with my family. And now I'm sitting here with you. It's weird. It's almost 24 hours since the beginning of game two. And I still don't know that I fully processed. I know what happened, but the gravity of what took place and just how how batshit crazy was that? Because I'm not sure I even realize where are you at on the batshit crazy meter?
I'd be lying if I said there wasn't a moment, maybe a few, where I thought, all right, this is like we're going to be the Clippers. This is what's going to happen. The Hawks are going to go up 2-0, and that's just going to be it. You know, like the way it was working was towards the end of the second quarter, when things really seemed to escalate drastically.
In a bad way,
of course. Yeah. I didn't think that they would necessarily lose, but I thought, like, this is becoming more and more daunting of a task. But the one thing I did think of was, what about the Knicks covering? And I lied at the Knicks, and then I doubled down on it, and then they won. So clearly I wasn't thinking like, oh, they're not going to lose, or like that they're not going to win. I thought that there was still a chance to win, but there's something about it where they're a second half team. That's very much their DNA.
All year.
And they were. And Julius Randle remembered, oh, yeah, I won the most improved player award for a reason. It's because I'm really good and I can attack the defense very well. And if my shot comes around, then I'm going to be unstoppable. And for some few moments, he hit the three in the beginning of the third and then didn't seem as great after that. Tossed the ball out of bounds and some crazy plays after. But things started to click. And before you know it, was what? Like almost a 10-point game? Was it a 10-point game?
It was a 10-point game. It was the whole – I mean, just everything about the night was – It was the ultimate roller coaster ride, which is we spoke on this podcast, I guess a week ago now. I forget about losing track of day, a week and a half, excuse me, 2 weeks almost, about how the last couple games of the season were kind of a microcosm of the season as a whole. And this game felt like that because you got off to the hot start, like the briefest of hot starts, but they were at one point, don't forget, what were they up 7-3, I think, but it felt like RJ had a three. I think RJ had another basket. It felt good. And then, oh no, bad, lots of bad. But then they fought back. And I think they got it to within one in the first half. And then, as you alluded to, end of the second quarter was a shitstorm. Julius comes out, hits what, if I wrote it today, I'll say it again. If they win this series, I think that shot will go down as the biggest moment of the series because it reestablished him as you said, a guy who remembered he's hit 42% almost from three this season. But even then, there was a few minutes of like this, like it didn't come right away. And then 33 points in 10 minutes. They went on a 33-11 run over that span of time, and that was the game. It was literally the Knicks put their shit together for 10 minutes and they won the game. Like that's, but all season long, it's like other people look at this team and they're like, it's the Knicks. We can't take this seriously, but it doesn't, like they get it done when they need to get it done. It's incredible. It's unbelievable what they were able to do.
Yeah. Great.
So I'm gonna go through some names. Tom Thibodeau, Derrick Rose, Taj Gibson, Reggie Bullock, Julius Randle, Obi Toppin. All of them had a significant hand in this victory. Do you think it's close between two or three of those guys as to who was most responsible for this? Or do you think, similar question to what we dealt with the other day, do you think it's one head and shoulders above the rest?
I think it's close. I mean, you know, if we want to break it down, right? We look at Tibbs and how I thought Tibbs was the biggest culprit of game one. And it seemed through that first half, it's going to be the same story that the Knicks were going to fail to make the proper adjustments. I mean, that, you know, they tinkered here and there, but schematically, maybe it wasn't the biggest change game to game. And you're thinking, oh my God, it's a double digit lead for Atlanta going into halftime. They're going to go home up to nothing unless something drastic happens.
Well, hold on, pause there. Did you think he was going to make the change?
I wondered. I really did, because of the fact that we had talked about in the last episode, the idea of like, okay, well, getting through that first game is like, this is kind of the reason, but then there's that continuity. And then, you know, if you had said like Tibbs will start Rose to begin the half, yes or no, I probably would have said no, it'll be Elf.
I think but I would have said no too.
But I had an inkling like, look, this just isn't working. And the Knicks keep getting off to slow starts for a reason.
Gave it away.
Right. And there's just no continuity. There's nothing like the Knicks need those first few minutes to get their kinks out. But the problem is that they've been getting it with Elfrid Payton, and then they've needed Derrick Rose to kind of get hot. But he is, you know, he's coming off the bench as well. So it's like in the time that it would take for the entire rotation to be warm and loose, no one's really ready yet. No one's in sync. And, you know, so that was kind of the big thing for my feeling. But I think you have to say Rose was the number one factor. I mean, he was just on fire. He played 39 minutes, which is just staggering.
Insane.
I think you have to as well say Taj too, though, because, you know, Noel looked like a shell of himself in a lot of ways. It's not a great matchup for him. The ankle, I have a feeling, is bothering him more than is being let on. I mean, it was great Noel. That he could play for Noel. Yes.
Yeah, there was a report about that, I think, somewhere today. I've not paid enough attention to Twitter today, but yeah, I think I saw something like that.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, look, Bullock just being himself, right? Like, he doesn't have to do anything extraordinary. He just has to hit a few catch and shoot threes, maybe some movement when he has the ball in his hands for a pull-up jumper. He basically did that, and that was all he had to do. Randall, you know, second half, yes, that's when things really started to click. But I think the fact that he didn't have to play with Elfrid Payton, which is also a Tom Thibodeau decision, that was huge. That was enormous for the entire team, and you could sense it right out of the gate. And then lastly, I mean, Obi, you know, what more is there to say?
It was a fun moment, but it was more than that. It was a fun moment because, yet again, we sound like a broken record here. He's contributing to winning, you know, not to sound like Tibbs, but that's what he's. And the alley-oop was like.
The Breen call is what made that alley-oop. I'm sure being there would have been fantastic, but just, you know, how Breen screamed it was really great, in my opinion.
Does that take precedent over the RJ dunk, do you think? Because they won the game?
I think it does. I think it has to. It takes precedent over his first dunk, that's for sure. But I will say this. The thing about Toppin that's so funny to me is I remember when, before the draft, thinking about like what his archetype is, who he kind of resembles the most. And I know you felt this. I felt this way too. Yeah. The idea of like a John Collins, without the defense. And we're now seeing Obi Toppin and John Collins in the same series together. And, you know, game one, I mean, Collins was fine, I thought, overall. Hit some
A couple of nice lobs.
But we're talking about now, like, Toppin playing, certainly outplaying him in game two and leading to winning basketball also on the defensive end.
Yes.
I mean, he was so active defensively, especially on that play before him getting the alley-oop.
Yes.
I think he deflected it and blocked it.
Well, that was a couple plays before the play immediately before the alley-oop. He just played some really nice defense on Gallinari. To your point, like, you could still get him. Like, we see, like, they got him on in the second half of game one where he didn't go back over to Gallo fast enough and Gallo got a three. Like, those moments still happen, but that's a rookie thing. That's not a you can't play defense thing. I think we're past the can this guy play NBA defense, because I think the answer is pretty clearly yes. And that's very exciting moving forward. I think it has to go to Rose. I love Taj Gibson. Like, I love – actually, if I'm – I hope my – I don't know if my dad listens to every podcast. If you're listening to this, I'm sorry for what I'm about to say. I love him like a father. Even though I think he's younger than me. It's fine. He's like all of our dads. All due respect to him, all due respect to Tibbs for making some adjustments at halftime. This was the Derrick Rose game as far as I'm concerned, because, I mean, what more is there is to say? Derrick Rose is amazing. He can manufacture, and the crazy thing is he didn't even shoot it that well. He was only 9 of 21. I saw that today and I'm like, how is he only 9 of 21? But he was. He just has a sense of the moment. You could argue he made the biggest bucket of the game when they were tied in the fourth quarter with they were tied at 91, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he put them up. So yeah, I think it's Rose. So someone asked on last night's live stream, and I'll say my answer and then I'm curious what yours is. This was your favorite Knicks win since when? I said it was since the game 7 2000 Eastern Conference semifinals against Miami. For me personally, this was above any regular season win, and it was above anything from 2012-13. What say you?
Man, it's been so long that I don't know, maybe it's the Miami win. The win against the Heat in, what, 2011?
Oh, wait. Was after a regular season win.
No. I'm talking about the series where, the playoff series where the Knicks won game four.
Oh, when they were down 3-0 or they were down 0-3.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe you could say something about them clinching it against Boston, but that whole series to me felt like after that J.R. Smith elbow incident and wearing the all black, it just like the energy and the momentum fizzled. And it just like, great. You were up, right? 3-0. And then
they were 3-0
and 4-2.
Cool. And then they lost the next two. I don't think I've ever said this, not to get off track. In some ways, I felt that that's when they got eliminated, when they couldn't close the door. Because it felt like, holy shit, when they went up 3-0, like, wow, wait, is this team really going to fuck around and do something this year? And then they lost those two games, and you're like, and then they obviously lose game one against Indiana. So, yeah, I don't know. I put it above anything from that year or the year before.
I do, too. Because also this team, it feels like there's a fighting chance, right? That was a ceiling team. You're expecting them to at least go to the next round. This, you're not. You're expecting them to be good. You're hoping they're better, but the expectations are so low that it just winds up being positive all around.
I was talking to Delore about this before because she's like, I want to go to a game. I'm like, settle down. but I'm like, I guess it's the reason why I'm not like, there's a part of me that's like, well, this team can't win the championship this year. So it doesn't. There's a part of me that doesn't feel that it is as paramount to get to a game at the Garden for the playoff run, because I'm like, it's not going to result. Like, there is no chance it results in a championship. And then she's like, well, wait a minute. So, but you're going to be disappointed when they lose. It doesn't matter who they lose to. So like, how does that work? If you know they're not going to win at all, but you're also going to be incredibly disappointed. And I had no answer for her. And I realized like, this team really does feel like it could beat any given team on any given night. It's just crazy. But yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but I just wanted to say that.
Well, okay. As usual, your wife is right.
Thank you for that.
Yes. You should go. It was a great time. And I saw a loss. I saw a crushing loss with 0.9 seconds left. And I had the time of my life.
You did.
Best game, best Knicks game I've ever attended. So
one might say the best time one could have outside of Atlanta in a particular establishment.
Yes.
One might say that. Okay. Another thing from the live stream after the game, we were talking about, this is my mea culpa moment. So someone asked, or maybe I just brought it up, best that Derrick Rose was like the Knicks' best in-season trade. I think I said since Dave DeBuscher. I forgot a couple of in-season trades. For one, Derek Harper was an in-season trade. I completely forgot that. Helped them obviously go to the finals, was arguably the best player in the 94 finals. And Earl Monroe, I did not realize this. Someone, I forget, I should give, I don't want to spend too much time looking up. Someone reminded me on Twitter today that Earl Monroe, he was traded 3 games into the season. Another pretty big one. There's also Carmelo Anthony. Also Stephon Marbury. And I believe you have another dark horse contender, or is that Andrew who put that down?
It must have been Andrew.
Okay. He mentioned the Kristaps Porzingis trade as an in-season trade because it kind of set up everything we're seeing now. I think that might be a little bit of a bridge too far. I'm sure I'm going to get shit for this. I think this is a bigger deal than the Carmelo Anthony trade. Not in terms of overall impact on the franchise. Obviously, the Carmelo Anthony trade set them up for 2012-13. It set them up for really several years. It was like there was real excitement over that team, over him, the whole thing. But in terms of his impact that year, like, they struggled after he got here. He struggled a little bit. And then they had one great playoff game, and he had one great playoff game. And then didn't they lose 4-0? Yeah, they lost 4-0 in that series. So, like, I don't know. Derrick Rose is just the best player in a playoff game that they won. I kind of put the Rose trade above this for, again, in-season acquisition and its impact on that season.
Well, we're talking about expectations too, right?
Yes.
When you acquire Carmelo Anthony...
And you give up...
Right.
The fuck everything. Yes.
That's what you're left with. You're left with Carmelo. Great player. Fantastic player, going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Wonderful, amazing.
Probably going to have his number retired.
Eventually, yes.
New York, because where else would it be? Although it could be in Atlanta, ironically enough. I kid. Those were a fun few moments when he was a Hawk, and then they gave him a jersey and then cut him.
I think everybody Carmelo has played for should retire. Let's retire his number in Denver. Let's retire his number in Portland. Let's retire his number in Oklahoma City, yep. Houston. There was a rumor he was going to go to LA. Let's just retire his number there too.
Let's just do exactly what we did for Jackie Robinson.
Hey,
you know 7 what? And 15 completely off the board.
While we're at it, all sports, please continue. I'm sorry, sir.
The thing about Rose is that it was at the time like, okay, this is your acquisition. You're not going to go far. Like, you're just getting a mentor. Great. You know, again, like for me, the idea of Rose at first was terrifying because it was, why are you buying? Like, how are you really going to give up a pick, a really good pick? And then we found out it's not going to be a really good pick. It's going to be like the 40th pick, or at least what turned out to be that.
Yep.
Totally fine. And then Rose started playing better, even better. So I think for him, it's there's a subtlety to it, right? Like, it's hard for me to talk about the Derek Harper trade as I admittedly was not alive yet when that happened. So I can't speak from personal experience.
He was good.
Oh,
he was good. He was big,
definitely was.
Big deal.
But yeah, in terms of Rose, I think maybe it's recency bias, but everything about what he's doing and is this like, okay, let's say he wasn't there, right? Who else would it be?
It wouldn't be anyone.
Right.
They wouldn't be here right now.
Right. Or they trade for, you know, some expiring contract that's like good enough, but not great. And he doesn't have this type of impact whatsoever. There's a synergy. There's this energy as well that just comes from Tibbs and Rose and even Taj too.
Can't leave him out.
We could call it the Holy Trinity if we wanted to. I mean, could. I don't see why we would.
I mean, listen, I have a lot of years of Catholic and Jesuit education that I feel comfortable referring to those three as the Holy Trinity. Which one's the Holy Ghost? The Holy Ghost is that's the one that would confuse me.
I think it's going to be, wait, are you saying theologically or in this scenario?
In this scenario, okay, one good. Of those three has to be because there's Jesus, who's the Son of God.
Yes.
Then there's the God, who's God. And then there's the Holy Ghost. Now, these are all three the same person, but they're all different.
Right.
But at least you could visualize Son and Dad. Holy Ghost is like out in the
ether. Holy Ghost has to be Tibbs.
It has to be Tibbs because he's on the sidelines.
Right. And the Father has to be Taj.
Has to be Taj.
And the Son is Jesus. Is Derek Rose.
So Derek Rose is Jesus. I think that's... Hey! Holy shit! He has the fucking God's Son. Oh my goodness.
The perfect grouping. Look at this.
Look at you! You're a bad Jew right now.
I guess so. But...
Now that we've offended everybody from all faiths.
I like how each podcast is just turning into finding like one entity, one group of people that we just, you know,
have fun with. We can't afford it.
No,
okay.
We cannot. We've definitely sidetracked. This is way off the rails and Andrew's not here to corral us back.
No,
so
he's not.
So I will.
This will be the last time that happens. Yeah. Let's move on. So emerging subplots in this series, and then we'll do a quick, Game 3 preview, and then we'll get to my interview with Monica. All right, I'm just going to actually read these off. Possible emerging subplots. You tell me which of these is the most interesting to you. And if you want to do alternatively, which one is not interesting to you. So here they are. Elfrid Payton's future in the rotation. Can we both agree not to pick this one? I don't want to talk about this.
We can avoid it, especially because I'm fearful of what the answer is.
I have nothing to say.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing to add.
What is there to say?
The proof is in the pudding. We saw it. It was evident.
We don't need to. Okay.
And yet I still expect him to start, but whatever.
There you go. Julius Randle's shooting struggles. Okay. We'll put that aside for a sec. Trae Young emerging is, I hate to say it, kind of a, well, was he a star already? I don't know. Can you be a star if you never make it to the playoffs? Whatever. He's emerging as something. Some fans in the Garden being not very nice people. For anybody who doesn't know, it was a fan that was the Knicks did the right thing, permanently banned him because he spit on Trae Young. So that's not cool. And then this Nerlens, I guess, Tripgate? Is there a Tripgate? Tripping Trae Young intentionally. I honestly, I'm not even really that privy to this. To me, the only subplot that I honestly really care about, all due respect to like anybody who has issues with like, I don't know, cursing chants, is if Randall like Is there a chance that just Randle's going to struggle all series? I'd be lying if I said there wasn't a part of me that, like, because if he, let's just say for argument's sake, he comes out in the first half of game three and it's like 2-for-8 or something with, you know, 1-for-5 from three or something like that. Like, at what point do we begin to be like, well, wait a minute. Is maybe just this is not going to happen in these playoffs. So I'm paying attention to that. That's about it. You?
Well, yeah, I have no interest in talking about the fans or Tripgate in the sense of,
nope,
it's in the past. Let's just move on. Yeah, no one wants
to
see.
Not here to talk about the past, Jeremy.
Right. There we go.
There you go.
Yeah. I will. Wow, that sounded a little foreign there. I will. I think the Randle thing is valid for sure, especially because we know how dominant he was against Atlanta this past year.
Yeah.
It's certainly concerning if he looks like he did for the first six quarters or so. I think the thing about Trae Young just emerging as a star, you know, I mean, it takes players, I think, usually until their third year to really break out. And Trae has been phenomenal this series to the point where, like, you know, I think with a much better point of attack, you could neutralize him even more. And the Knicks haven't really done that. I thought Elf, honestly, to start the game was okay in his few minutes. And then it kind of deviated from there. And he definitely got a little bit worse and then was yanked and didn't see the floor again. But, you know, it just, are you going to start Frank? I don't see it. I don't see you.
Oh God. No, that. we know that's so, not happening. Well, we knew that wasn't going to happen.
Right. When we talked the last point week. More, it's like, if you're not going to start Rose, you know, if you're sticking with Peyton, are you going to then play Rose for another 38, 39 minutes?
Well,
just really quickly, speaking of which, we talked about this on the last pod, the whole Tibbs philosophy of if your players are not, if your stars are out there longer than the other teams, then you have a better chance of winning.
Yes.
The fact that Nate McMillan was saying, oh, you know, like we played our guys 35, 36, like playing them 40 minutes or so. That's asking a lot of them. What does that say to your team? Like the idea of you can't play, like you can't endure that type of minutes. Because if he puts Trae Young and Bogdanovich back in the game sooner, we're likely looking at a 2-0 deficit.
Well, not, I don't know, but
this was an analogy I saw, which I think was from The Athletic, where it was just like the idea of the Hawks had the opportunity to step on New York's neck and break it. And they didn't. They let the Knicks go.
Yeah, but
as a result, the Knicks won.
Can I just say on that point, because I've been thinking a lot about this, they tied, not only did they tie the game, they tied the game with like 5 minutes left.
Right.
Or they were within one with 5 minutes left, and then they made it tied with three. And it's not like they had, were like, usually when you get a comeback, the guys making the comeback run out of gas. They didn't even expend any gas. They ran off a 9-0 run in about 90 seconds, if not less.
But the thing is that if you bring those guys in earlier as well, you could stifle what the Knicks are doing or match them. I mean, it seemed every time during the game, before the second half, right? In the first half, and even in the third quarter, every time the Knicks would take a step, it seemed like the Hawks were in lockstep with
them. Bogey would hit a fucking fadeaway or
So, yeah, I mean, of course, the Knicks manage.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
To take that lead, but I don't think it would be to the point necessarily where it can't be combated by the Hawks if they have their best players on the floor.
It's a fair point. I'm not going to be like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, if he had brought them in earlier, it's a definite win. That said, Chris Herring had a great piece today for SI, in which he talked about this with Nate McMillan, and this is not Nate McMillan's first rodeo with some questionable decision-making in terms of minutes allotment. He referred, read the piece from Chris, but he referred back to when he was the Pacers coach. He didn't bring, he didn't extend Victor Oladipo in a key game against the Cavs. Pacers ended up losing that series in seven. We'll see what happens here. That's actually a good transition. So looking forward to game three. Friday, 7:30. So tonight at 7:30. MSG, ESPN. Biggest thing you want to see happen differently. So again, went back and I rewatched most of the game too. And I saw some people on Twitter saying that they still didn't think we were going after Trey Young enough on defense. They keep slotting Young on whichever wing, it's usually Reggie Bullock, but sometimes it's Alec Burks, over in the corner. To the point where, like, you can't really do one-on-one damage from there. So then the question becomes, okay, do you bring that guy out and then, you know, switch? Ultimately, this is going to come down to, are they going to make a decision? Are the Knicks going to make a decision to rejigger their offense and put Trae Young into high pick and rolls and force the issue? And how do you do that? If they're going to, like, do you do that with Rose? And so do you run high pick and rolls with, like, Rose and Reggie Bullock, or Rose and Alec Burks, or Quickly and Bullock, or, like, whichever combination it is? Even RJ. Like, this is not something the Knicks have done all year. It is outside of their comfort zone. But as you mentioned, this is the playoffs. This is the playoffs. Things are different. So that's what I'm curious about moving forward. Do they get to a point where they resort to doing that on offense? Do they feel comfortable with that? Do they feel like that's going to be like, all right, we could pull this off and make it worth it for us? That's what I'm looking for.
I think I'm looking more on the offensive end in terms of just not so much targeting Trey, but a lot of times the offense looked clunky. There were sluggish passes, or, you know, when a player had an open shot, just neglected to take it. That kind of thing. Because the Knicks, I checked, they had the second best 3-point shooting percentage from March 1st to the end of the year. So, you know, things are getting tighter, but something about the shooting has just kind of been off. And I do wonder if maybe the fans have some sort of impact. Maybe from a defensive standpoint, the fans are great. But offensively, I mean, we're seeing these two teams that are very good shooting teams just not hitting it. And I'm wondering if there's a certain point where maybe it is because of the fans. Maybe it's because of, you know, just people in their periphery.
I think the Hawks not hitting shots. I think the Knicks, I don't think there's been a ton of just like you're wide open and you have all the time in the world. Like the Knicks are making them think about these threes. That said, they have missed a few open ones, more than a few open ones, probably. I asked, here's a little tease. I asked Monica McNutt that exact question. Do you think the fans are getting, and listen for her answer. Biggest thing we think will change in game three, other than the starting line, let's actually, a good opportunity to talk about this. Do you think that there's a chance that he starts Taj?
That's what I was going to say. I think he'll start Taj.
Oh man.
But then that's the other thing. You neutralize Taj and Rose together, which is still a nice tandem.
Yeah.
I mean, you stagger them in such a way you could, like, but then you're already expending time. Right. That's the thing. But I thought Noel did fine, I guess, on the back as a second stringer, you know, coming off the bench in the third quarter.
I think Noel's fine. You know, Burks can throw a good lob. Quickly could throw a good lob. I think the key is that if you start Rose, you're pulling him for whatever it's end of the first / third quarter, beginning of the second / fourth. And it's a question of, is Tibbs confident that the team could score as much as they need to during that stretch of, you know, whether it's 10 minutes total, 12 minutes total, whatever it is. And that's where I'm going to write about this a little bit for Friday. I think the emergence of Obi Toppin, throwing it back to what we said before, as a bit of an offensive weapon, like, does that factor into whether he's more comfortable starting Rose because he feels like, wait a minute, I really have something with this bench unit now without Rose, just with Quickly, Burks, Toppin, the fuck am I forgetting? The center. And then, oh, I guess in this world, we're making it a 9-man rotation. Right. So it's, you know, RJ or Reggie Bullock, whoever. We'll see. Nothing would shock me, which leads us to a perfect transition. Last thing we're going to do before we get to my interview with Monica, confidence level for game three, confidence level for the series, and then, of course, prediction.
High
for both game three and the series?
Well, so I think that the Knicks will win at least one in Atlanta. That's my gut feeling. I don't I know if it'll be game three or four. That's the
that's you know. Where I'm exactly at the same place, and that's why my confidence level for the series is not. I can't say it's high. It's like,
but then here's the thing, right? You said Knicks in seven, and the idea of the Knicks winning one game in Atlanta, which would mean that home court advantage has been restored.
Yeah, but here's what I don't like. I don't like the idea of losing game three, winning game four, and then, but it, let me rephrase that. Losing game three and then having to be in a position to win three out of four against Atlanta, because then you're talking about, all right, we're going to steal game four. Great. You come home, it's game five, like you just had a must win game and now you have another must win game, more or less. I mean, yes. Could you lose game five and then go into Atlanta, win game six, come home, win game seven? Yes, it's possible. But like, I don't really want to be in that spot. So I this might sound crazy, but I really do feel like game three has almost the, maybe not equal importance to game two. It's damn close though.
No, game three is incredibly pivotal. I don't have the exact number, but I remember that in series that were tied 1-1, the winner of game three would typically win the series
80%,
at least 75 to 80% of the time. Yeah,
that sounds right.
And that's huge. I mean, that to say that 8 out of 10 times, basically, the winner of game three in that scenario wins the series, it pretty much dictates it.
Yeah.
So, right. That's why I think that I would feel a lot better if the Knicks won game three, puts a ton of pressure on the Hawks. But again, the Knicks really just need to win one for... And then it's a best of three. That's the other thing. You don't have to look at it as like, I know it's hard not to.
I know.
Where we're standing. But the thing is that the Hawks also have to do the same thing. They also have to win three out of five games.
Let me say this. I like the fact that there's two games off between game four and game five. Because if the Knicks do drop three and then win four, it's kind of like you reset it. And like, there's an extra day to let the air out of the balloon, I guess would be the best way to say it. Okay. We have to predict the score. So are we both going to go Knicks win this game?
I don't know. Because again, like if the Knicks lose this game, I'm just going to pick the Knicks to win game four because I still believe that they're going to split it. So I'll say this, because I'm confident in the series, because I said the stat, you know, the general stat about how the Knicks do, I have to go with Knicks game three. I have to. Otherwise, it would, you know, we're basically just saying they have to overcome greater odds, 20 or so percent chance of winning the series after dropping game three.
Something has to go right that hasn't gone right. I don't mean to say like something has to for this. I mean more like I believe something will go right that has not gone right yet, whether it's Randall coming out and having a huge game, we get a something. I like what I've seen enough from the defense, especially over the second half in game two. Barely. I like what I've seen enough. I think the Hawks are going to hit more threes. They only hit 26% or 27% from three in game two. It's a massive factor in how they lost. Ah, goodness.
The devil's advocate, though. The Knicks shot less than 30% from the floor for the first half.
Oh, the Knicks shot like two. Shit.
The whole game as well. But I'm saying specifically.
They shot under 40% for the game. Yeah.
Right. But even in that first half where it was like 28, 29%.
Yeah.
You know, something's got to give.
No, you're right. All right. I think the Knicks will win by. Let me pick a score.
Well, I go first. I was closer for this one. Thank you.
You're not welcome.
That's fine. What was the final score of this one again? It was 101-92.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say 105-100.
That's a good score.
I'd be happy.
I'm going to keep picking higher scores and eventually it's going to pay off for me. I'll go. I'll go 114-111. 114-111.
Is that a buzzer beater three?
I don't know. That's not required of me at this point. Okay. Jeremy, anything else from you before we get to the second half of the podcast?
Jalen Jacoby had a really fascinating stat I just want to share.
Please.
That Julius Randle last night, 0-15 opponent shooting as the primary defender.
I saw that. Yeah.
Just Incredible. The most misses without a make by a primary defender in the postseason since the 2013-2014 season. So seeing him and Trey go one-on-one together and Randle holding his own, it's just an incredible testament about where he's gone as a player. And I think it'll snap back for him. It has to. If we're betting on the law of averages, like, he has been better, obviously. But to the point where I have the supreme confidence in him because he's been who he has been. And for him to have these two games, or at least a game and a half.
No, listen,
look weird. I think he'll just attack the basket, get things moving, and hopefully open things up. Maybe the corners open up more. Maybe Atlanta stops, letting, focusing all their attention on Randle.
What did he have this game? What did he score? Randle, was it 16, 13, 12, with something in that range?
15 on 16 shots.
Okay, it was 15, and which is the same amount that he scored in game one, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he has combined in two games for seven fewer points than he averaged per game in this series throughout the regular season. And I'm sorry, I've been the one who's making the point about, like, don't take what happened in the regular season. I do think that what Randle did in the regular season should at some point translate. And so I agree with you. You could look at it like, oh, the Hawks did their job. They took one on the road. I look at it the other way. We've not yet gotten a Randle game, and the Knicks survived that once, and they almost survived it twice. So yeah, Knicks win game three. Knicks still win the series in seven. And on that note, we will now get to, thank you very much, Jeremy Cohen. We will now get to my conversation with MSG's Monica McNutt. Joining me now on the Knicks Film School podcast, I am very proud and happy to say that she is a returning guest. Not only because she's kind of blown up in the few months since she's been, talk about someone who's star. I know she's getting bashful if you're watching on the YouTube. Talk about someone whose star is on the rise. Let's just talk about the here and now, though. You can, if you're listening to this, you listen to it on a Friday, a game day, you could catch her pregame on MSG getting underway at 6:30 p.m. You catch her halftime on MSG. And of course, the expanded 1 hour postgame show on Madison Square Garden Network. The one and only Monica McNutt. Monica, hello. How are you doing?
I'm good, Macri. It's good to be back with you. Thank you for that blush-worthy intro.
That's all I ever try. Listen, the content and the information for the fans is secondary to just making the guest blush. That's all it comes down to. If I do that, I've done my job.
Okay. Well, you've done your job today. So happy to chat with you. Let's talk about this team.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Listen, I'll start with this. So we're recording this on Thursday. It's at 5 o'clock. It's been quite a last, 22 hours as we're talking right now. Have you come down yet from that? Because I think I'm still up in the air somewhere. I don't even know where I am. How are you feeling?
I'm in the process of coming down, only because I have to put on my very analytical hoops hat to write about it for one of the national folks. And I will say this, of the two games so far, to me, the Hawks have reached closer to their ceiling in terms of good basketball than we have easily. And so all things considered, I feel good.
I'm with you. I was preparing for something I'm writing as well. And as much as yesterday felt better, if you look up and down at the numbers, and particularly the shooting numbers for us, it's not like we're anywhere near where we were. Forget about the most of the regular season, definitely the latter part of the regular season. I'm wondering, so let's talk about the crowd for a second. Have you ever seen anything like that? Because you've played ball, you've covered a lot of ball. Like, where does that rank for you?
It's got to be top five. And I think this one will always have that asterisk that 2020 will have next to it, right? Like, it is, first of all, it's so heartwarming and encouraging to see people next to each other, right? Masks, and we understand, been vaccinated, all that good stuff. Like, we understand that. But just to see the ability to gather again after the 2020 that we all went through. So I think you're getting some of that in the gratitude of this crowd. But I also think 8 years. Like, I don't have to tell you, you've been a Knicks fan. Like, there's such a tremendous energy and enthusiasm about how special this team has been and what they've accomplished this year.
It felt like watching the videos of everybody spilling out onto 7th Avenue. It was really 8 years worth of like frustration and like angst and like pent up all of the bad stuff just came out, and in a good way, which was crazy. What I wanted to ask you, though, and why I thought of the crowd, do you think that affected them, the Knicks, in more of a negative way than maybe we anticipated, in terms of like, you know, because the shooting numbers are what they are, and I don't have another explanation for it.
No, I'm not going to put it on the crowd. I don't think it was the crowd. Although we dissect these good box scores, right, like there's plenty of room for improvement.
Yes.
The overall things for me, particularly in game two, you responded, right? You responded. Yes. You found a way. Crowd be damned. Shaking floor. OB emotional chants from the audience, from the crowd, like, you found a way, and that's the bottom line. I do think that, and Tim said this leading in, playoff basketball is different.
Yeah.
And so I think this is the first for a lot of guys outside of D Rose, who has been our best player so far consistently. Yeah. And I think that's what you're seeing more than anything. When I think of OB and Quick in particular, this is their first NBA crowds, right? Like, this, you know, they're living the dream. So yeah. I'm not going to put the nerves on the crowd. I'm going to put it on playoff intensity.
Okay, so then next step, you go down to Atlanta. It's usually on the road in the playoffs, a hostile crowd. I have a feeling there may be a couple of Knicks fans down in Atlanta for these games. Do you just throw it out there? Maybe they're all there for Magic sitting wings. I don't know. I don't really partake. Do you think just as this series goes along, are you expecting to just see them more closely resemble the team that we got accustomed to down the stretch of the season?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I think if you just look at the vacuum of the matchup between these teams during the regular season, I don't know that that tells the whole story.
I don't think it does either.
The Hawks are healthier. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Hawks are healthier. Obviously, in the third game of the regular season, Trey got hurt in the second half. Like, you know, this is a team that's trying to win as well. You know? So I think the Knicks will get better physically. They'll get more acquainted with the intensity of the playoffs, but they also got to keep thinking quick because the adjustments are going to, the moment is going to demand that.
Speaking of getting adjusted, their coverage of the pick and roll, I think, was under some criticism after game one. I had a feeling we were going to see more of the same with just some more intensity, maybe a little bit more help, targeted help. We saw the centers come up high a little bit more, especially in the second half of game two. I kind of like how they're defending it because it neutralizes some other things that the Hawks try to do. Tell me, though, what do you see out of like their defensive coverage? Do you like it? Would you like them to make any more adjustments? Where are you at?
Third quarter yesterday or third quarter game two? Give me all of that. Give me that intensity. Yeah. Give me that level of concentration. Listen, Trae Young is very good, right? Like, new villain in the garden, whatever you want to call him. He's very good. Clint Capella, he's very tall. He's very long. Like, he's a beast around the rim.
Yeah.
And so the idea that you're going to completely neutralize these guys, nah, right? But what I do think played into the entire pot yesterday, particularly in the third quarter, was the aggressiveness with which the Knicks played to put pressure on this Hawks defense. And then in that mix, you got to talk about Reggie Bullock, who has been our 3-and-D guy, right? And so there was the first 3 minutes of the ball game, you saw that defense flying around. You didn't really see it again until that third quarter, right? Yeah. But there's something to be said for being committed on the defensive side of the ball. And Trey is excellent, but Trey stands at under 6 foot, slight of body. Like, you talking Reggie Bullock, who's 6'6", you know, easy. You know what I mean? Like, come on, let's go. I still buy that defense wins championships. And even if your defense has to take another step in the playoffs, to me, that remains more in character than for us to all of a sudden start D Rose or demand that Alfred Payton become this super scorer. Like, let's stay within character. Let's be better versions of who we are.
I love that you said that. Again, we got Monica McNutt here. You could see her pregame, halftime, postgame on MSG Network. She's all over the place. Reggie Bullock. So I'm going to throw something at you, and I want you to tell me if it's a hot take. I broke it out a few weeks ago, and I referenced it again today, that I think Reggie Bullock, after Julius Randle and Derrick Rose, is the Knicks' third most important player because of what he brings on the defensive end, his defensive versatility, how you could put him on a Trae Young, you could put him on a Bogey Bogdanović. And then on the other end, he has that gravity in terms of, like, you know, defenses know where he's at every second of the possession. And when he gets going, Julius Randle gets going and vice versa. You think that's too far? Because I really feel he's that important.
Nah, I don't think that's too far at all. Like, the only pushback that I might have, Macri, is that you might go Bullock / Burks in that third spot.
Okay, all right.
But I don't think that's too far at all. And here's the deal. You said it, which is why it's even more important to me. When Reggie's on, Julius has an outlet.
Yes.
In the first two games, we've seen Drew revert a little to that spinning around thing. And that's not good news. That's not good news, right?
Thank goodness.
But in that third quarter, I believe it was the basket that gave us the lead.
He hit the tying basket, and then in the fourth, I believe he kept it at four. He hit a lot of big threes. I'm getting confused.
And one of them in particular was a Julius Randle assist.
Yeah.
And so those two, it's almost a tandem. And so I don't think that's a hot take at all. It means you watch this team closely and are not just watching box scores.
Well, thank you for that compliment. So we're burying the lead here a little bit because, listen, I have tried a lot to this year think about, is there a parallel in like New York sports history or even honestly basketball history for Julius Randle? And now I'm turning my attention to Derrick Rose and I'm asking myself the same question. A guy who obviously won an MVP, he was the youngest MVP in the history of the league. There was a point where he was waived. A team waived him. The Jazz just said, we don't want it. Just go. You take your ball and go home. Anybody could have had him. And now what is he? Is he the 20th best player in the playoffs right now? The 15th? The 25th? The fact that we're even having these conversations, like, how crazy is this that this is happening right now? And we get to be the beneficiaries of it.
I love it, Macri. Like, there's two things that stand out to me. One, I love how D. Rose is so candid about this. Mm-hmm. When he talks about being grateful and understanding that there are guys younger, older, in his same spot that didn't get the shot that he got, like, I feel that. Like, I am someone who tries to lead with gratitude because it really changes your perspective. It demands that you meet the moment when you're so grateful. And he has done that in spades all season long and in the playoffs. But the second part of it to me, like, really big picture, step away from sports and just for all of us to keep in mind, you've got to give your hopes and dreams room to grow and breathe. He probably never envisioned in his MVP season this point of his career coming so soon, right? But he's leaned in, he's worked on this version of his body, this version of his game, mm-hmm. and continues to meet the moment. And so when I think of Derrick Rose, I think of grace. Like, he's handled the game with care, he's handled his body with care, and he's a tremendous leader. Like, I don't know if we talk about him as a leader enough.
Well, I want to talk about him as a leader right now because Obi Toppin, I know you've heard all the interviews that I have, and quickly also, the two of them continue to bring up his name. And it's not even like they're asked about him. They're just asked about, like, being a part of the team and the veterans. And they bring up his name. And it's like, I'm just trying to put myself in their position. Like, you're a 23-year-old rookie, 21-year-old rookie coming in. And you're like, this dude won MVP. And now he's here coming off the bench. Yeah. Just trying, like, what must that be like?
Yeah. Yeah. I especially for Quick, right? Like, they got that Cal connection, Calipari.
Yeah.
I know that they were watching him in his prime. Yeah. And so for them, there probably was that pinch myself. Like, I'm not only have I made it to this league, I'm working alongside this guy who I admired from the point guard squad spot. If you're Quick, from all his dunking ability, if you're Obi, like, yeah. I have followed and consumed this man's career. And now he's my teammate. But, you know, we had Kyle on MSGPM with us and he talked about Derrick a little bit. He's like, he's so shy. And kind of a quiet person. But when you put him in his element, that being the 94 feet of a court, he's a beast, right? And I think, again, for him, as he's grown, part of his dynamic is to set the table for the younger guys and to lead the way. And, like, we're saying all these nice, rosy things, but don't get it twisted. The man's a dog. Like, he's a competitor, and we've seen that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like...
And so, not only him, but Taj Gibson.
I just think it's so dope.
The two of them together is what I love the most about this team, that they've been together now at three stops. And, like, Taj is my man, Fort Greene. I How great must this be for him, even more than Rose being from Brooklyn?
Taj is the best. Like, the first interview I did with Taj, she noticed my jewelry, which I, like, appreciate it.
That's Taj a good man the right there. Like, smart man.
The good dude. He's such a great dude. Like, again, I don't know. And it was funny. I was watching The Jump the other day, and Vince Carter hit, like, 21 threes in the Jump studio, and Rachel was, like, gushing about it. And I know it was this cute moment, but I think in our mind, when we consume NBA basketball, we don't even grasp how good these dudes are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so for Taj, like, game two, he had 6 points, 7 rebounds, was 3 or 4 from the field. But please keep him on the floor. Like, keep him on the floor because he gets it and he's important. And he doesn't try to play outside of himself, but he's steady and he's going to play hard and he's reliable. So, I had a D Rose, and I think yesterday, I had a Reggie Bullock, Taj Gibson appreciation tweet. But, like, Taj is literally one of my favorite people on the team.
He's a guy that it's crazy because you think about, oh, he's a 35-year-old dude on a minimum contract. How important could he possibly be? Well, they don't win that game without Taj Gibson last night. He's pretty darn important. Yeah. A couple more and then I'll get you out of here. I still feel like this series is going 7. That's always been my prediction from beforehand. Did you have a prediction? And if so, what was it before the series?
I had Knicks in 6, which I will admit was a little dismissive on my part.
Well, I don't know if it was dismissive. I just think you've been watching the Knicks for the last couple months and they're really good. Where's your level of confidence right now?
I still think they find a way to get out of the series. And if it comes down to the seeding and home court advantage, that's what it's there for. And so I'm not mad at that. I just continue to look at the trajectory so far, and there's more room for the Knicks to get there. And I think they're going to get there. Whereas I really think game one was pretty close to the best punch from the Hawks.
It might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other word that we've heard all season with this team is family. And again, I feel like, I don't know, maybe they're just really good actors, but I feel like I could watch interviews and stuff and you could tell when guys are trying to, like, blow the smoke up, you know, where it doesn't feel like that to me. And I almost wonder, like, look, I want them to win this series. Obviously I'm a massive and crazy person fan. But I feel like that family dynamic is instilled in this team almost regardless of what happens is going to hopefully carry forward to years to come. Do you get that feeling too?
Yeah, I do. We said this in March. I filled in a bunch on the pre and post for Wally as he was doing CBS stuff. There's like a perfect balance of, like, veterans, but not just like I'm sitting on a bench veteran, like veterans that play valuable minutes.
Yep.
Guys that are hitting their stride as professionals. And then young guys. Like, there's such a unique balance around this group. I buy 100% the family dynamic. I remember the presser when the Big 15 was born. And I was kind of like, that's cute. But it's been true. And then they proceed to hang tough with it. You know what I mean? Like, that game. And so it's really something special, I think, when the only people that bought in were the 15 guys in your locker room.
Yeah.
Like, did you predict this season, Macri? Because I didn't.
If someone would have came to me before the year and said they're going to win 30 games, I would have been like, I mean, can I have whatever you're having? Because I feel like, I mean, I give Tibbs coach of the year if they win 30 games with this roster. That's honestly what I probably would have said.
And you weren't the only one. Like, I don't remember the national predictions, but nobody had this team performing as well.
Oh, there were people who had them winning 15 games.
And honestly, like, just on paper, you kind of had to be like, well, I mean, you know, it's coming.
I mean, look, if you're being honest. It's been crazy. And the best part of it, I have to say, has been just watching, like, all of the stuff from that surrounds the team as well. You are part of that. So the last thing, I have to get your thoughts on this before I let you go. You're blowing up a little bit. I have to say, I had a little bit. I know. Listen, I had a little bit of, like, pride. Even, I know we don't really know each other, but, like, I listen to Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective religiously. So when it popped up on my feed that I was like, Monty McNutt's on the Hoop Collective. Holy. So I was like, I was a little excited, you know, on ESPN, the whole thing. So I have to ask you, what has, you know, what has the last bunch of months been like for you? I imagine pretty fun.
I'm always ready to take a nap, Macri. Like, always.
That's fantastic. That's great.
But it then, like, again, like, and maybe this is why D Rose tugged at my heartstrings, leading with gratitude. We are not that far removed from 2018, where quite honestly, I was about to go teach high school English and coach high school basketball because I didn't know that this was going to come back in this way. Mm. And so I'm incredibly grateful. I'm working very hard. I'm having so much fun. And it's really dope, like, just in terms of the timing, the respect for women in the space. We've had conversations about diverse candidates. Like, it's a really great time to be in this space. And all the Atta girls, I appreciate yours. I appreciate folks that hit me up on Twitter. Like, that matters to me, because a big piece of this and why I have pushed this, doing it my way, is so that I can leave breadcrumbs for the next chick coming behind me. And so I'm very, very proud of the headway that I'm making.
That's amazing. Thank you for saying that. That's awesome. And hopefully, listen, I'll say it. There's too many white men doing this shit. we gotta get some more people. Oh, Sam, come on. Can we be honest? I mean, is that not allowed? Whatever.
We can be honest. But you know what? And it's funny because, like, we always say sports are a microcosm of society.
Yes,
lots of white men run society still. And so we're working.
Like, we're working,
and I'm proud of the progress in this space and the larger spaces as well, too. So,
well, I love it. But we are company men and women here. So the last thing I will say is, again, the first and foremost place you can catch Monica Minette is on MSG Networks, yeah, where she will. There you go. Not my first rodeo. Well, she will be live before Game 3, of course, halftime of Game 3, and after Game 3. And you listen, if you turn on MSG at any point in time in the vicinity of a Knick game, you will see Monica. You will hear Monica. You will get her insights and wisdom. I'm trying to think of anything else. Where can folks find you? Twitter. You're on Twitter. I know that.
Yeah. Twitter and Instagram. Last name, first name, McNutt Monica. It'll pop up. It's been good. I'm having fun.
Awesome. This was a lot of fun. Everybody out there, thanks for catching another episode of the Knicks Film School podcast. And we will, of course, be back with you with another one before you know it.